This is .NET Cast with hosts Mark Baker and Nick Hemdahl.
Sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.
And now introducing your host for .NET Cast, Mark Baker.
Welcome to .NET Cast. I'm your host, Mark Baker. Thanks for joining us again. With me tonight is my co-host, Nick Hemdahl. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mark. We're going to have another great show tonight on .NET. And don't forget, you can always find us on the web at www.ddj.com/podcast/.NET Cast/.
In this episode, Microsoft Patterns and Practices Development Lead Peter Provost starts off talking about how the understanding of CAD work items and their ability to nest themselves has evolved.
There might not be enough value in creating that many work items. So let me kind of rewind and tell you where our thinking is today.
Okay.
A work item, remind you of the things a work item provides. A work item is a scoping container, so it provides scope. So we know it provides scope around services. We talked about that a few minutes ago. It also provides scope for non-service components, and it provides scope for event broker connection. It provides scope for workspace and UI extension site addressing. So when you want to find a workspace or find a menu, all of those things get scoped by the work item that you're in. So if you think about scoping, the other service that a work item provides in addition to that is lifetime management. It is a container. So what that means is I can put things inside of the container, and when I tear down the container, it will tear down the component parts. It's iDisposable aware, and so if you put components into it and services and components that implement iDisposable, when you tear down the container, it will tear down all of the contents.
Mm.
So if you think about those two things, you start to get a sense of where a work item boundary is most valuable to you, and that is going to be around scoping and lifetime management. So in other words, if you need to replace a service like we just discussed,
right,
or extend or augment the addressability of some of those addressing things like workspaces and menu items and things, or commands or events, then you probably want to bring a new work item into play. If you know you're going to be bringing up a use case that has perhaps some heavy resources and you're going to want to tear them all down when you're done, then you may spin up a child work item to contain that stuff so that you can easily tear it down with one dispose call. So it still does align reasonably to use cases, but what you'll often find is that 6 or 8 use cases can happily live within one work item instead of there being a pure one-to-one matching.
Hmm. So you may have, let's say, multiple work items within a module.
Yes.
And you may have obviously multiple modules in a particular application. Is there, I guess, a good rule of thumb that you can suggest that where people should consider breaking things along module lines, like trying to decide how chunky a module should be or what types of things should break their application down in a general sense? Is it more like a business object related in a sense of the domain entities within their application, or is it more service based in terms of trying to decide where to break things down?
Yeah, I mean, my leanings on this are kind of like as follows. When we think of a CAB application, the shell, I don't typically consider the shell to be an application.
Right.
The shell is like a portal or a host for applications to load into. And I think of the modules themselves as applications in the logical sense. So again, to go to a banking situation, it is very likely that in the banking world, the investment management application is separate and distinct from the basic account application, right?
Right.
So the management of checking accounts and savings accounts and simple things like that is probably part of a single module. It probably deploys together.
Right.
It's updated together, shares a lot of the same services, possibly business and domain objects. So those things, you start to look at that and you start to get a sense of these guys are all pretty closely related. It has the other benefit of it seems very likely that the IT department would be divided up that way. So you get the final benefit of saying, okay, these guys, this team of people over here are the ones responsible for building the simple or basic accounts application. which we roll out in the form of a CAB module. And of course, there's another team who are building the investment management or the investment portfolio application, CAB module. And that logical breakdown seems to work very well then, where you end up with the application is itself a CAB module. It when it becomes deployed, it may itself be made up of one or more modules, actually, and certainly one or more DLLs.
Right.
But that logical breakdown in terms of kind of thinking about the related functionality seems to be the way that works best for people.
And there seems to be some, I guess, some tension, too, I guess, in practice. I know we've seen this with certain things based upon how, you know, applications are normally developing. One example would be that, like, a help system, where on the one hand, you could see a help system being something that is probably very similar within your application family from one app to the next. I mean, how you want to display help, how the user interacts with it. There's typically a single help file that the documentation user education people put together for your application. You've got this thing broken down into modules, but you've got one help system. And then you're sort of faced with, well, do I put this thing into a module because it's an entity called help, which has views that need to present themselves, whether docked windows or pop-up windows or whatever, or do I put that into something like the shell because I consider that to be a service, if you will, that all my applications in my family are going to need to make use of. And even though that the content, the underlying content, the chum file or whatever format you happen to display your stuff in, is a unified file. It's something that exists for your entire application family, not just for the shell. And so there's that, I guess, that, you know, tension in the real world about where you should put things based upon how things sort of logically break down within your app, that you don't necessarily end up with one help file per module, because that's not the way the doc people look at it. They look at it as a, let's say, unified application with one file.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly is a tension there that's always pulling and tugging you. And that's why we've seen people who have made successful CAB applications that have, you know, their modules broken down along different lines, or even go so far as to say that their CAB application is one shell and one module.
Wow.
With a bunch of supporting assemblies. So they're not taking advantage of some of the aspects of CAB around multiple module partitioning, but they're finding the value in CAB in other ways, because their application maybe didn't, the way they thought about their application's architecture was a bit different, but they still got enough value out of it that they could use CAB and kind of roll their own aspects of certain things. So, you know, the help one is a good analogy for talking about that problem. Because you're right, that's one of those situations where you're in the real world, you almost always end up with a functional team who owns help for everybody.
Right, right.
And sometimes you'll find infrastructural things, or internal engineering type things that fit that. And so sometimes what we do, or what we've seen people do is to kind of create what, you know, a foundational module that provides all of those capabilities.
Right.
And so you'll have a team that owns that foundational module, and we just know that it loads into the shell first or early, and everybody else can then take dependency on it being there while they build their own little application silo.
You know, one of the things too we've seen is even something like talking about thinking about help and staying on that for a minute is like the tension between something like events and services. And I know we've had discussions among ourselves about, well, now take help for example. I need help for an item. I know it's handled by some other module within my application. I could post an event, and I could have, assume that somebody else is subscribing to this published event, which says, show me help for this particular topic, or I could do it via a service. I could say there could be a service called Hi Help Service that I interact with and say through a method, you know, please show help. So in some cases, there's ways you can do the same, solve the same problem with events and services, and you're trying to decide which is better. So what would be some guidance there as to when you should be thinking about events and when you should be thinking about services so that you're not confused between the two?
No, that's an excellent question, and it's very observant, because a lot of people don't get that at first when they start looking at CAB. Most of the things that you can do, or I would say everything that you can do with the event broker, you could also do with a service dependency reference, where you take a dependency on a service that's published in the root work item and you make a call. The event broker allows you to be more decoupled than that. When you want to do it with a service, you'll at a bare minimum have to take a dependency on the interface for that service and on possibly whatever other objects that service may be meant to consume or produce.
Hmm.
When you go with the event broker, depending on what the event args are defined for that event, you don't have that restriction. just kind of, let's just say that restriction is not baked into the event broker.
Right.
You may choose to publish your event in such a way that it passes a very strongly typed event args, and now you've at least bound any subscribers to knowledge of that event args type. But if you don't, if you go with a very simple thing that basically says it's maybe a standard event args or an event args that holds an XML document, if you were to go that way, now you are completely decoupled from each other with no binary dependencies at all. And there are situations where that is exactly what you need.
Mm.
Maybe these two application silos, these two modules, for political reasons or for legitimate code reasons, cannot take a binary dependency that they share. There might be a reason for that. In which case, then the event broker becomes a very valuable way for them to notify each other of things happening inside of the application. I think in a typical well-factored cab application, we're going to see a good mix and a rich mix of them both. I have a tendency to kind of say if I'm not passing a lot of data, if it's very fire and forget like, if it's very much one to many communication channel of notification,
right,
that obviously lends itself towards event broker style. And if it's really servicing, I want to get something done and I need an answer back.
Right.
And you're going to do something for me. Well, that's very obviously a service. And then there's that squishy middle ground, right, which is the hardest part. And in the squishy middle ground, you're going to have to go case by case. And one of the deciding characteristics here is, do I expect an answer back?
Right.
Right, because here's the thing to remember about Event Broker. Event Broker allows the subscriber to indicate thread affinity. So the subscriber can indicate that they want to be called on a background thread. So that means, as the caller, you cannot guarantee that they will have executed before you get a chance to move on to the next line of code.
Mm.
So you have to think of the Event Broker as fire and forget. So even though you, because of .NET and the way .NET uses references to classes, even though you can have a subscriber who changes the data inside of the event args.
Right.
So as for example, a cancel event args, which is specifically designed to be changed by the callee.
Right.
You should not do that using the cab event broker, because you as the caller do not know whether the recipient will be called in a blocking way to you.
That's an important point. I mean, if you need to do obviously some management that way in terms of how your events are handled by the who's ever going to receive them, that you really need to be thinking about services at that point, not events.
Absolutely. If you're expecting to get an information back on this call as I fire this event, then it shouldn't be an event.
That's a good best practice. Basically, just treat events like you send a message off, and whether it's handled or not, you don't really care. If it's handled,
exactly.
Great. If it's not, don't worry about it. With service, you're really presuming there's somebody on the other end that's going to respond to this thing. It's not, well, if there's nobody there, I don't care.
But yes, with a service, first of all, you can know whether you get it or not, right?
Right.
You make your service dependency and you can inspect the variable to see whether it was set. Like you can check it for null, right? And you know whether or not that service is there and available to you.
Right.
And you make calls on it, multiple calls potentially, getting values back and getting work done. With an event broker message, it's literally like writing a letter, putting it in an envelope and dropping it in the mailbox. You don't know if the person you're sending it to still lives at that address anymore.
Well, that's all for this episode of .NET Cast. Send us an email at .NETcast@sunburstsoftware.com and let us know what you think of the show. Take care, everybody.
The opinions expressed on .NETcast are solely those of the participants and not necessarily those of its sponsors or CMP Media, its partners, or employees. .NETcast is a CMP DevNet podcast and is produced by Sunburst Software at sunburstsoftware.com. Additional production support has been provided by Digital Context at digitalcontext.com. CMP DevNet is solely responsible for the content of .NETcast.
Sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.